House Bill number 278. Senator from Barton.
Mr. President, I move that House Bill number 278 be passed, the objections of the governor thereto notwithstanding. This is what has commonly been called the Christmas bill. It's a response to a kind of plethora of not necessarily lawsuits, but the threats of lawsuits by ACLU across the country to school after school, which puts local school districts in a real quandary whether or not they can afford to fund a defense suit or just to give in and have a Christmas holiday or some other celebration rather than to honor Christmas, which is a long-standing heritage in our country. And it doesn't deal just with Christmas. The language of the bill protects all federal holidays. So they have to be recognized federal holidays, and simply says that you can't be prohibited in the public arena from celebrating federal holidays. It passed 28-2 in the Senate, 114-32 in the House. I think the only concern about the bill was expressed by some who felt like Independence Day with associated fireworks, that this might give some cover to those who would want to use fireworks in areas that were otherwise restricted. I think if you read the language of the bill, there's no mention of fireworks, there's no mention of how the celebration is to take place. And if you look historically at court cases where similar concerns have been had, probably the most recent would be in St. Charles when there were a couple of demonstrators over an interstate bridge hanging banners and certainly exercising their right of free speech, but they were asked to leave. When they refused to leave, they were arrested because public safety trumps the letter of the statute. That's happened again and again. There are specific legal titles to some of those things that have happened, but I think that's the answer to those concerns. Those concerns are, I believe, are groundless, and I would ask the body to please vote for this override, and we would be happy to answer questions. Otherwise, I renew my motion.
You've heard the motion from the senator from Barton. Does any other senator desire to be heard on that motion? The senator from Buchanan is on his feet. For what purpose do you rise?
To inquire of the senator from Barton.
Senator from Barton, do you yield to an inquiry?
Good afternoon,
Senator. He does.
Senator.
Proceed.
I don't have the bill in front of me because they didn't distribute it. I guess they didn't distribute any of the House bills.
Well, I had it, and now I can't locate it. So
I've asked it's my about a chief paragraph. To bring me a copy of it, but I was the only Republican to vote no on this bill originally, and the reason
Senator, you've been wrong before.
I know. I probably am wrong now. But my understanding is that if you compare, there are two subsets of municipalities, those that have fireworks bans and those that don't. And my understanding is that insurance rates are lower in municipalities that have fireworks bans. And you have the language in front of you, but I believe that the case could be made that if we pass this, that fireworks bans in municipalities would be made illegal.
Well, I guess that's where, and of course, we're neither one attorneys, and so we're arguing.
What's the wording? What's the wording say?
Well, I'm waiting for my staff to bring me another copy of the bill. I was given one, and now I must have moved it to a different file folder because I'm not seeing it.
I brought this up in committee, and I discussed it on the floor prior to the passage of the bill, but the governor's veto message basically says the same thing.
Right, and that was a concern, I think, even of the bill sponsor, Representative Bratton, in the House. And so he did talk to law enforcement and others, and he got at least enough comfort that he moved forward with the bill. Again, I can't speak for any specific local government. I would imagine that this would not compel a local government to acknowledge a particular way of celebrating. Certainly that's not the source of the legislation. The source of the legislation is a refusal to let the celebration be acknowledged as a Christmas celebration. And so I don't think that's going to be a problem.
Would it be possible for us to get from the staff of the Senate a copy of the actual bill?
I hope
each of us, so that we could talk about it. The thing is that if this bill becomes law, then there's the possibility, and it's a real possibility, Senator, that somebody will be given a citation for having shut off fireworks in their municipality. And they will go to court, and they will make the argument that because of this bill, that municipality's fireworks ordinance would be void. And if that were the case, here it is. Thank you. Would you get okay, here it is. It says, basically this says, no state or local government entity, public building, public park, public school, or public setting or place shall ban or otherwise restrict the practice, mention, celebration, or discussion of any federal holiday. Well, so I can extract from that, no local government entity shall ban the practice or celebration of any federal holiday, one of which is the 4th of July.
Right. Legal precedent, I think, Senator, is that whether it's alcohol, whether it's fireworks,
but isn't
whether
fireworks...
if there's an imminent lawless action or a clear and present danger that is determined by local officials, whether it be the fire marshal, whether it be the local police, then they can restrict that because of that clear and present danger.
Okay, but I'm just asking you, is it reasonable to suggest that shooting off fireworks is a practice and celebration of a federal holiday? Yes or no?
Oh, absolutely. But this doesn't mention how you can celebrate the holiday.
Yeah, but it says is that you may not ban it. It says that
right,
no local government entity shall ban.
Right, doesn't say you can't ban fireworks. It doesn't say you can't ban alcohol.
Okay,
you
but know, wait.
There are lots of communities that ban alcohol and
okay,
celebrations.
Okay, but I'm just asking you.
Right.
Is it a reasonable proposition that a court, when ruling on a citizen who was ticketed by the police for shooting off a firecracker in the city limits, that court will read that and say, well, the city can't ban the shooting off of that firecracker?
I don't think so, Senator.
Well, sure. You just admitted a moment ago that shooting off a firecracker is the practice and celebration of the 4th of July.
Well, there are other ways you could practice and celebrate the 4th of July that would also violate local statutes.
Well, I know.
But the
other
the
ways
point.
Aren't being banned commonly.
There
and
are...
so all I'm saying to you is that if it is reasonable that a court will do that, then this voids...
Well, I don't agree that it's reasonable that a court will do that. I mean, I understand your argument.
But you think the Supreme Court would say no.
Oh, I don't think a local court would do that. I think that they would read very clearly in this language that there is no formula in here for how the celebration is to take place. It's relatively clear that it's really the naming of the celebration that is the subject of the legislation, is that you can celebrate any holiday. It does not authorize how you celebrate it, whether you celebrate it with a demonstration, whether you celebrate it with fireworks, whether you celebrate it with alcohol. If there's a local ordinance against nudity and somebody wanted to celebrate with nudity, I don't think the courts would look at that and say, well, looks to me like you're out of luck. It says here you can celebrate and they're celebrating. That would be contested, and I think there would be, and first of all, I can understand how someone who might really want fireworks and feel like this was the case, if they had the money, if they wanted to spend the money to take it to court, that they might do that. I think they would lose. I don't think there's any question that they would lose, and I think that would be the end of it.
Okay, so then this is the crux of our disagreement.
Right, exactly.
Okay, so here's the thing. If I'm right, then what happens is that the homeowner's insurance advantage for all of those municipalities that have fireworks ordinances goes away.
Over
and if you're right, nothing bad happens.
Over what period of time, Senator?
You know, all I'm saying is that this is a flaw.
No. I understand, but
and it's probably going to pass.
Let's acknowledge your argument. I don't agree with it, but let's acknowledge it. So let's just say that that happens, and so there's somewhere that the court rules that yes, you can shoot fireworks. How long do you think it will take for all those insurance policies to be rewritten?
Oh, I don't know, a few years. It'd give us a chance to fix the problem.
How long do you think it would take us to address that in the legislature?
Well, I know that's true. So you know what I'm going to tell you? I wanted to have a discussion about this. I feel like you and I have had a free and fair discussion. I'm going to sit down. I'm going to vote no. The bill will probably pass.
Right. And you were as consistent with your no vote originally.
Yeah.
I do think that we know more about it now, but I understand, I respect your position.
Thank you.
I disagree, but
thank you for the free and fair discussion, Senator. Thank you, Mr.
Senator.
President.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Senator, you're recognized to close.
I renew my motion. Thank you.
Senator from Barton renews his motion on House Bill number 278. Madam Secretary, call the roll.
Senators Brown, Chappelle Nadal, Cunningham, Curls, Dempsey, Dixon, Emery, Holzman, Justice, Kevany, Kehoe, Krause, Lager, Lamping, Lavoda, Libla, McKenna, Munslinger, Nasheed, Nieves, Parson, Pierce, Richard, Romine, Roop, Sater, Schaaf, Schaefer, Schmidt, Sifton, Sylvie, Wallingford, Walsh, Wasson.
Senator from Phelps, votes aye. Senator from Newton, votes aye. Senator from Johnson, has an aye. By your vote of 24 aye and 9 no, the motion passes. House Bill 329. Senator from Webster, for what reason do you rise?
Just a minute, please, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that Senate substitute for House Bill 329 be passed, the objections of the governor thereto notwithstanding.
Would you like to explain your bill, Senator?
Yes, I would. Several things in this bill have already been passed with other bills. It started out with a bill dealing with conflicting reports with bank reporting, discrimination, and that got taken care of a bill I passed. Currently, the three things in there that are affected, this bill would allow an individual irrevocable trust, personal trust, be set up for funeral homes, for burial purposes, and would allow what it basically does, those people can set those up right now, but this would make that trust not be considered when dealing with family issues or public assistance. So basically, that money could be set aside and not be considered for public assistance. That person would not be taking consideration as far as assets when determining their nursing home costs, et cetera, like that. The second part of it deals with a private family trust, and there's very few of those in the state of Missouri. The auditor audits them yearly, and the auditor suggests they be audited every 3 years instead of every year. And that came from the suggest the auditor. It is a private trust, does not deal with public funds in any way. The third part of it allows an origination fee. Currently on small loans, they can have origination fees of up to $75, 5% of the cost of the loan. This bill would allow that origination fee to go to 10%, up to $75. The total amount of the origination fee does not change, but it does change from 5% to 10%, but the max does not do it. Be glad to answer any questions about this, Mr. Speaker. Mr. President, excuse me.
There are no speakers in the Missouri State Senate, Senator. You've heard the motion from the Senator from Webster. Does any other senator desire to be heard on that motion? Seeing none, Senator, you're recognized to close.
Mr. President, I close.
Senator from Webster renews his motion on House Bill number 329. Madam Secretary, call the roll.
Senators Brown,
aye.
Chappelle Nadal,
aye.
Cunningham,
aye.
Curls,
aye.
Dempsey,
aye.
Dixon,
aye.
Emery,
aye.
Holzman,
aye.
Justice, Kevany, Kehoe, Kraus, Lager, Lamping, Lavota, Libla, McKenna, Munslinger, Nasheed, Nieves, Parson, Pierce, Richard, Romine, Roop, Sater, Schaff, Schaefer, Schmidt, Sifton, Sylvie, Wallingford, Walsh, Wasson.
Senator from the ninth votes no. By your vote of 25 aye and 9 no, the motion passes. Staying on that same calendar, House Bill number 339. Senator from the 23rd, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I would ask that House Bill 339 be brought before the body. I would. What's the motion? Sorry, my mind has been elsewhere. Thank you, Mr. President. I would move that House Bill 339 be passed the objections of the governor thereto notwithstanding.
Would you like to explain your bill, Senator?
Thank you, Mr. President. This is the bill that relates to uninsured motorists. We have a requirement in the state of Missouri, purchase auto insurance. It's one that we require of every owner of a vehicle in the state of Missouri. And we have people who've been violating that law. Mr. President, advocates of the legislation have been working and made accommodations to try to address some of the objections that someone might have to holding someone responsible who does not have insurance. What this bill does is basically say that if you're out of force for insurance for more than 6 months, it means you've ignored numerous notices, violation of the law. What you'll still have is the ability, if you're in an accident, to be cared for and to recover any damages that were the result of that accident. With the passage of this legislation, what we would not allow for an uninsured driver is the ability to get non-economic damages. And when I say there were accommodations made, that even if they were at fault, if they were involved in an accident with someone who was either intoxicated or under the influence of drugs, in those cases they would be able to recover non-economic damages. So I think it's a common sense piece of legislation, and I would ask my fellow senators to support it.
You've heard the motion from the senator of the 23rd. Does any other senator desire to be heard on that motion? Seeing none, Senator, you're recognized to close.
I close.
Senator from the 23rd renews his motion on House Bill number 339. Madam Secretary, call the roll.
Senators Brown, Chappelle Nadal, Cunningham, Curls, Dempsey, Dixon, Emery, Holzman, Justice, Kevany, Kehoe, Krause, Lager, Lamping, Lavota, Libla, McKenna, Munslinger, Nasheed, Nieves, Parson, Pierce, Richard, Romine, Roop, Sater, Schaff, Schaefer, Schmidt, Sifton, Sylvie, Wallingford, Walsh, Wasson.
Senator from the 8th, votes aye. Senator from the 14th. You're recorded as a no. Your vote shall be changed to an aye. Senator from the 15th, would you repeat your vote?
Aye.
Votes aye. Senator from the 23rd?
All the absentees.
Madam Secretary. Senator from Barrett, you're in the chamber and you need to vote. Votes aye. By your vote of 26 aye and 8 no, the motion passes. Staying on that same calendar, we're at House Bill number 436. Senator from Franklin, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I move the Senate Committee Substitute for House Bill 436 be passed, the objections of the governor thereto notwithstanding. Mr. President, there's been a lot of talk about this bill. Mr. President, I think it's possible that we may end up being here for quite some time talking about this bill. I have a feeling, Mr. President, that after I make my opening statements, there probably will not be anybody inquire of me in a substantive manner, so there's a few things that I thought maybe I would talk about before I lose control of the microphone. So, Mr. President, what I wanted to do, and I don't know that this is going to sway the way that anybody's going to vote, so whether it sways anybody or not, I do want for these things to be said into a microphone. Mr. President, if you would have asked me months and months ago whether or not this legislature would override the governor's veto of House Bill 436, I would have said absolutely. Absolutely. Missouri has a Second Amendment-friendly legislature. and I have no question in my mind that the Missouri legislature will override the governor's wrongful veto of House Bill 436. If you would have asked me that a while back, that's what I would have said. Mr. President, if you would have asked me 2 weeks ago, if you would have come to me and said, "Hey, Senator, do you think the legislature is going to override the governor's veto of House Bill 436, I would have said, "Yes, absolutely, I think there will be a successful override." But Mr. President, after 11 years of being in this political world, after 11 years of being in this pit with countless pit vipers, I should have learned. I should have learned, Mr. President, that every snake has more than one trick up his sleeve. Because, Mr. President, what I did not do is I did not realize that our Attorney General Chris Koster, who, Mr. President, I would remind you that the bill we have before us right now is not new to us. The bill that is before us right now is not new to the Attorney General. The bill that's before us right now, the Attorney General nor anyone on his behalf spoke against it. But suddenly, Mr. President, in the most tactically perfect, calculated perfectly move on the part of our Attorney General, mere days before the override attempt, our Attorney General, Chris Koster, decided to show his true colors, Mr. President, and write a letter with every kind of crazy imagining that you could think of, Mr. President. If I was to lay awake at night dreaming of the most absurd assertions that I could possibly make about this bill, I don't think I could have done a better job than our Attorney General, Chris Koster. But you know what? The man is a masterful technician in the political world. He is. He is awesome. I mean, for him to have thought of this crazy document and then be so smart as to release it at just the right time, Mr. President, when we would not have the ability to overcome his false argument, I didn't realize that one man, the Attorney General of this state, Chris Koster, one man could be so anti-Second Amendment. And make no mistake, Chris Koster has shown himself to be perhaps the most anti-Second Amendment person in this state. Make no mistake, ladies and gentlemen, this is the same man that is going to ask to be your governor next time around. But in a masterful move, just days before the veto attempt override, Chris Koster releases this letter and literally scares the bejesus out of our great law enforcement community. Chris Koster has our law enforcement community believing that the sky is going to fall and the earth is going to stop revolving on its axis if this bill is overridden. So, Mr. President, before I lose control of the mic, I just want to take this joke of a document by our Attorney General and I want to try to pick it apart. Mr. President, our Attorney General, in this letter, he admits that this act is meaningful in many ways and may very well be found constitutional by the federal courts. Did you all hear that? The Attorney General of the state of Missouri admits in his letter that this act is meaningful in many ways and may very well be found constitutional by our federal courts. I want you to know, Mr. President, that I am very proud of our law enforcement community. I know that many within our law enforcement community have become what we call oath keepers. An oath keeper is a person that says that they will maintain their oath to the Constitution, and if asked to do something unconstitutional, they will follow their oath rather than following the order. And I know we have quite a few oath keepers in the state of Missouri. Quite a few of our law enforcement folks are oath keepers. Quite a few of our law enforcement folks have said they will not violate the Second Amendment. Well, what I would say to our law enforcement community is that the override of this bill is one way for the Missouri legislature to say, we agree with you and we've got your back. We will give you the legal standing to stand up and say, no, I am not going to violate a person's Second Amendment rights. So let's look at Attorney General Chris Koster's arguments, maybe one or two at a time. He says this act, oh, Mr. President, he says this act will call for an end to cooperative efforts between state and federal law enforcement officials. Oh, Mr. President. He says this act will call for an end to the cooperative efforts between state and federal law enforcement officials. I ask our Attorney General, why wouldn't you have just written in here, it might have taken less words, why didn't you just write, if this law passes, pigs will begin to whistle and cows will begin to fly? Because that statement would have been no more untrue than to say that this law calls for an end of the cooperative efforts between state and law enforcement officials. In fact, this act only prohibits Missouri law enforcement officers from cooperating in federal efforts that are unconstitutional. I guess perhaps our Attorney General has decided that our Constitution means nothing, and he has decided to try to scuttle this protection of constitutional rights. In his objection, the Attorney General, Mr. Chris Koster, displays his lack of understanding about or disagreement with the core purpose of the Second Amendment Preservation Act. The General Assembly doesn't want the state cooperating with or infringing Missourians' constitutional rights to keep and bear arms. So his argument says that this would call for an end to the cooperative work between Missouri law enforcement officials and federal law enforcement officials. Mr. President, that is patently false. The only thing this act would call for an end to, and I trust this isn't happening now, it would call for an end to unconstitutional enforcement of things by the federal government. Now, if the federal government is currently doing things that are unconstitutional, which I don't know whether or not they are, but if the federal government is doing things that are unconstitutional, I guess this means that our Attorney General is in agreement with those unconstitutional acts. So, hey, Mr. Koster, more power to you. He is complaining and asserts that the act prevents state and local law enforcement officers from cooperating with federal agents to enforce federal gun control laws. Baloney. The core stated purpose of the act is to prevent unconstitutional federal infringement of the right to keep and bear arms. Attorney General Koster's claim, I don't even want to go into that. The act also provides statutory cover for the many law enforcement officers who have committed that they would defend the rights of Missourians. See, this bill, Senate Committee Substitute for House Bill 436, actually protects law enforcement, contrary to what Koster says. It's ridiculous, Mr. President. The Attorney General, Chris Koster, also states that there are good federal laws relating to firearms that are not duplicated in Missouri statute, and that the act will prohibit state and local law enforcement officers from cooperating in their enforcement. Blah, 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 baloney, baloney, baloney. His objections turn to the thought that federal law does not duplicate. One of the examples that I've heard over and over and over is, well, what if they're going to go and confiscate machine guns? Guess what? Machine guns are illegal under Missouri law as well. So it doesn't create a problem. Mr. President, this is the most masterful political move I have seen in my 11 years in this building. This is the most dishonest, disingenuous document. This is the most dishonest, disingenuous argument I have ever seen against any bill. Yet, Mr. President, apparently it has been very effective. My hat is off to you, Attorney General Chris Coster, for being such a masterful politician. Notice I didn't say statesman. Notice I didn't say someone who works for the people. I said politician. We are seeing with our very own eyes the most masterful move on the part of a Missouri politician that perhaps has ever been perpetrated against the people of Missouri. Because what Attorney General Chris Coster has done with this letter is he has perpetrated, I believe, a crime against the people of Missouri, because what he has done is he has placed their Second Amendment rights, their constitutional rights, in jeopardy, because before he wrote this ridiculous, untrue document, this bill was on a smooth sail for an override. Oh, Attorney General Chris Coster, my hat's off to you. I have to admire a worthy adversary. I just have to do it. I don't like it, but I have to admire a worthy adversary. He's done a great job, number one, of proving to the people of Missouri. I would just ask the people of Missouri to remember this slick, snakish move made on the part of Attorney General Chris Coster when very soon he asks you to be your next governor. He also says that this act will grant criminals a right to sue police officers for enforcing the law. Oh my goodness. You know, people already have the right to sue other people or governmental entities when those people violate their civil liberties, their constitutional liberties. That is already in place. So suddenly this act changes all that? I don't think so. Objection number three, the act will create, now this is laughable. The act will create confusion in Missouri's concealed carry law. Give me a break, Mr. Coster. And to my Democrat colleagues, hey, let's not forget that this guy used to be a Republican until it was politically expedient for him to switch parties. Just give that a little consideration, my Democrat friends, when you figure out whether or not you're going to stand with Attorney General Chris Coster or the people of Missouri. When you decide whether you're going to stand with the Constitution of the United States or the Attorney General Chris Coster. Just to my Democrat colleagues, I don't think you've forgotten, but just to remind you that he was a Democrat until it was politically expedient for him to be, I'm sorry, he was a Republican until it was politically expedient for him to become a Democrat. I guess he was in favor of the Second Amendment until it became politically expedient somehow, some way, for him to be anti-Second Amendment, which is what he has shown us to be. So, let's see. Confusion in the concealed carry law. Well, first of all, he doesn't give any examples in this letter, so it's very difficult for me or anybody else to try to, you know, overcome his objections. He gives no examples, but if we look at chapter 571, the concealed carry chapter, there's just a few things that this bill would modify about that. One is it prohibits publishing of private information about gun owners. I don't know if that confuses the concealed carry law. I don't see where that confuses the concealed carry law. Number two, it says that healthcare professionals cannot be required to collect data on gun owners. Number three, it lowers the concealed carry age. Maybe that's confusing to the Attorney General. Maybe we just uncovered it. That might be it right there. It lowers the concealed carry age. Maybe that's confusing to him. I don't know. I'm just trying to speculate because he didn't give any examples. He just said that it creates confusion, which indeed it does not. It provides a gun buyback program. That's not confusing. And it has allowances for people to become school protection officers. I don't know. Maybe something in that is confusing to our Attorney General, Chris Coster. But let me just tell you something, ladies and gentlemen. If those five or six provisions are confusing to this man, and he wants to be your next governor, yeah, go ahead, elect him. I mean, if it's that easy to confuse him, you go ahead and elect him. Objection number four. State nullification of federal law is unlawful. Oh, I love this one. The Attorney General states in his opinion, one that was well represented during the debate of this bill in the first place. The General Assembly found that argument was wanting. The fact is, state nullification is a power the states and the people reserve unto themselves in the 10th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. You see, Missouri nullified the Real ID Act, and what did the feds do? They relented. Many states have now passed marijuana laws. I see one of my good colleagues from Kansas City over there that's probably interested in the nullification of marijuana laws. States that have nullified marijuana laws, have we been watching the news lately? The federal government, the big bad federal government that makes all these threats, well, if you pass marijuana laws, we're going to do this, that, and the other thing. You know what the federal government is? The federal government is that dog barking at the end of its chain that upon closer examination has no teeth. I think they're smoking it up in Colorado right now. And I haven't seen any stormtroopers from the federal government come in there and start busting heads like they said they were going to. In fact, the federal government recently said they're just going to look the other way. Because you know what the federal government does every time a state properly nullifies an unconstitutional federal law? The federal government blinks every time. So don't talk to me about not being able to nullify an unconstitutional federal law. You know, Mr. President, I don't know that the people of Missouri are so much unlike the people of Colorado. I think the people of Missouri are going to be watching this vote very closely. I think the people of Missouri, even the ones who have not seen through the red herring and the ruse that this letter from Attorney General Chris Koster is, even the ones who have not yet figured out that Attorney General Chris Koster's letter is a joke, will, over the coming days and weeks, figure out that this letter from Attorney General Chris Koster, this letter that has perhaps torpedoed the effort to enact this constitutional measure to protect people's civil liberties and their rights. Ladies and gentlemen, my colleagues, let me just tell you, your people are going to figure out that this letter from Attorney General Chris Koster was a bunch of baloney. And they're going to figure out who voted yes and who voted no. And it's going to be real hard to go back home and say, yes, I support the Second Amendment. No, I don't support making it strong. So, Mr. President, I'm sure we're going to hear a lot of rebuttal to some of the things I've just said. I wish I could tell you, Mr. President, that I'm confident that this veto override is going to be successful, but I just don't know that I feel it in my gut. So what I will say, like on some of the old movies, I'm certainly not comparing myself to a war-torn general. But, Mr. President, you know how sometimes on those old war movies there will be the occasion that some old war-torn general or a war-torn colonel who's been fighting their whole life, they've got battle scars, and they are a warrior. And by some strange happenstance, they come face-to-face with the commanding general of the other side. And they tip their hat to each other, and they show respect. So let me just say to you, Attorney General Chris Koster, you may have beat me this time, but I'm not going away. I will be back, Attorney General Chris Koster. You may have beat me this time, but I'm not going away. And the people of Missouri are going to remember what you did, Attorney General Chris Koster, when you asked them to be their next governor. So my hat's off to you, Chris Koster, because maybe we'll eke out a success on this, but maybe we don't. And if we don't, ladies and gentlemen, it is absolutely Chris Koster that torpedoed this by lying. He has lied and lied and lied. And unfortunately, our well-intended law enforcement community, let's just think about this for a minute, okay? This bill is not new. The provisions of this bill are not new. This bill was debated and debated and debated during the regular session. This bill waited and waited for its fate to be determined by the governor, and then the governor vetoed it. This is not a new decision item, ladies and gentlemen. This is not a new decision item.
It was not a new decision item for Attorney General Chris Coster. Chris Coster has known about this bill for a long time. And what did we hear out of him? This is what we heard out of him. Cricket, 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 nothing. Until the time was just right. I could just imagine, I think this was what was going through the mind of Attorney General Chris Coster. I think. I don't know this for sure, but I think this is what went through his mind. Ooh, I hate the Second Amendment. I hate the Second Amendment. I can't stand the thought that Missourians, the citizens of Missouri, are going to have the strongest piece of Second Amendment legislation in the country. I can't stand that. What can I do to stop it? Oh, wait a minute, wait a minute. Whoa, whoa. There would be political ramifications. There would be political ramifications. What am I going to do? I know. I know. I'm Chris Coster. I am a political genius. I used to be a Republican until it was politically expedient to become a Democrat, and then I decided to become a Democrat. You Democrats might want to think about that, because when it's politically expedient for him to be a Republican again, guess what he's going to be? A Republican. So Chris Coster, the master tactician of politics, says to himself, I can't tell people that I hate the Second Amendment. I can't act like I hate the Second Amendment. So this is what I'll do. I'll figure out a way to trick law enforcement into thinking that the world is going to stop revolving on its axis with the passage of this. Now, why didn't I say something sooner? Well, because I needed more time to think up this level of lie. That's why. But as Chris Coster continues to have that conversation with himself, and he continues to develop his strategy, finally, he writes the letter. I bet this letter was written some time ago. And then it was probably tweaked and retweaked and tweaked again. And then it was just held. It was just held for the exact right moment. When is the exact right moment? Let's see. Veto session is on Wednesday, the 11th of September. So let's see. I don't want to let this letter out too soon, because then people like that crazy senator from the 26th district would have time to pick my argument apart, and the reasonable people of Missouri and the reasonable professionals within law enforcement would know that I'm lying to them, and there would be too much time for them to recount my argument. No, 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 this is what I'll do, because I am Chris Coster, the master of politicians. This is what I'll do. I'll wait until it is literally just days before veto session. Let me ask you something, Mr. President. Did Attorney General Chris Coster suddenly, in an epiphany, realize there was something wrong with this bill? I think not. What he did was he purposely, masterfully, determined the timing. He released the letter, try to trick law enforcement so that people that sit in this chamber would have to say, oh, well, I don't know. I heard from somebody in law enforcement that they don't want me to vote for this. You know what's going to happen? If we're successful with this override, people are going to figure out, the people in law enforcement are going to figure out that this letter is the biggest bunch of baloney that's ever been presented from an official in the Missouri government. If this fails, if we don't override this, then guess what? There will never be the impetus to examine everything that was in this letter, and people will end up thinking the letter was true. So I don't know which way it's going to go, Mr. President. I really don't. But I'll tell you this. This fight ain't over. It ain't over. It ain't over. And if this doesn't succeed, which I hope it will, but if it doesn't, we'll be back to revisit this again, and we'll be back to revisit it again, and we'll be back to revisit it again. So if nothing else comes out of the possible failure of this override, I just hope that the people of the state of Missouri is a very Second Amendment friendly state. So hey, everybody in Missouri, keep in mind, if this fails, it was scuttled, it was torpedoed by one man, Chris Coster, and he did it by lying, And he did it by deceptively using perfect timing. And he's going to ask you to be your next governor. So, Mr. President, I'll be happy to answer any questions. Otherwise, I renew my motion.
Senator from the 14th is first on her feet. For what reason do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I would like to inquire of the senator from Franklin.
Senator from Franklin, do you yield to an inquiry?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Senator, I am actually not taking this opportunity to beat up your legislation, but I want to talk about an issue that is really important to me. You and I and Representative Funderburk sat in my office. Now, you know I voted against the bill. I'm going to vote against the bill today. But there is an issue that not only yourself, but Representative Funderburk chose to add in this language, which has been ignored not only by our governor, but a bunch of people in the House who call themselves progressives. I call them elitist progressives. I call them elitist. You know why? Let me tell you why. Because the issue that I've been dealing with every single day are people who are involved in gangs and have illegal guns that should not be on the street. They've not talked about this issue at all. You and I have communicated over this interim. And I think you and I have a greater understanding of what we are trying to do.
And people might be surprised at the level of communication that you and I have and how many times we agree. Now, certainly there are many things that we disagree about.
We disagree often. But here's what I'm upset about. We have a crisis, at least in 4 Senate districts that are represented in this body, of young African Americans who get illegal possession of guns and use them in rapes, use them in burglaries, and use them in other crimes. But the folks on the House side, on my side, the so-called progressives, I call them elitist progressives, they don't talk about the black community or the crime we face every single day. Senator, you know this more than any other person because we've communicated about this. I can't even sleep at night because I have a gang member who lives 2 doors down. I have a person who lives across the street from me who sells drugs. I am now one of the people who call the chief of police every single week. I heard gunshots at 2 o'clock in the morning, at 3 o'clock in the morning, at 4 o'clock in the morning, and I don't even live in a bad community. But I'm hearing gunshots at night, and Senator, you know just as well as I do, I should not be hearing gunshots at 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning.
Or anytime.
Or anytime. I have text messages to my chief of police. I'm frightened to death. I've got a gang member who lives 2 doors down. I'm not even kidding you. But some of these elitist progressives, all they're talking about is what doesn't even exist in the state of Missouri. Now, there are some fundamental issues with your bill. I concur with that. But part of this language that we added to your bill, because we compromised and you saw, rightfully, as well as other people who are in this body, that while you can support the Second Amendment, let's deal with the crimes that are happening in the inner cities where people unlawfully have possession of guns. Let me tell you, I've done several ride-alongs during the summer, and I gotta tell you, nothing's changed. I could tell you some of these elitists over in the House, they haven't gone on any of these ride-alongs.
Oh, no.
You know,
no.
That might
require them to get dirty.
Now, I want to invite them to the hood because apparently they're speaking for all Democrats, and I don't even speak for all Democrats. You know, I call myself an independent progressive Democrat, but that independent, I'm going to underline that because I remain an independent. But what I have a problem with is when there are a group of so-called progressives that say that they are championing the cause for all Democrats, I'm telling them that they are wrong. There is not one single article throughout this entire conversation about your bill There is not one article that these elitist progressives have addressed the issue of crime in the inner city, of gang members having guns unlawfully. And in your bill, which I voted against, but in your bill, you added language that I care about that deals with all of these gang members, ensuring that parents properly train their kids on how to use guns, and making sure that guns are safely stored, and making sure that when a gun is stolen, it's immediately reported. But not one of these elitist progressives even talked about that. And it's an insult to my integrity. It's an insult and it's an offense. And I am sick and tired of representing. You know, we're taking for granted. We're taken for granted, Senator. And I am not going to be taken for granted anymore, and I am not going to shut up, and I'm not going to calm down, because when it comes to violence in my community, I am going to stand up about it. No one should live in fear. I am a senator who can't even sleep at night because I have a gang member who lives two doors down, and I have a drug dealer who lives across the street in a relatively great neighborhood.
And I'm sure you've thought of this, but imagine if you have to live in fear, how many other people in your community are living in fear?
Exactly. Exactly. Right? Exactly.
You know, I thought
so
of something.
I understand. I mean, I wanted to figuratively pass the peace pipe to you and tell you I'm not going to beat you up. I'm not going to vote for your bill. But I have a problem with my colleagues that call themselves progressives and they ignore the black community. I have a problem with that.
I thought of something that I'm just going to offer to you. You know, I was thinking that your amendment sailed right through. I mean, your amendment was well received in this body. I think everything that you've just said, I mean, I don't know how many times during our tenure together, we've been together for 11 years, you and I. I don't know how many times I would be able to say that I agree with everything you just said when you stood up. But this is one of those times, right? I agree with everything you just said. And so I'm just going to offer you an idea. You talked about the peace pipe, right? We're not in Colorado, so it would only be a figurative
peace pipe. It's figurative peace pipe.
But I have an idea, and that is, I think I could understand if you were a little bit upset at the governor about vetoing one of your bills, and a little bit upset at the, you know, elitist progressives that you're talking about. I mean, what the heck? I mean, go ahead, vote for the override. I mean, it would make quite a statement, wouldn't it?
Senator, I still have to vote my district, but I'm not here to beat you up. What I'm saying is I firmly support, within the law, the support of the Second Amendment. I'm as supportive of the First Amendment as you are of the Second Amendment. And that is why I'm standing up and speaking. I know that there are people who want to speak and move on and just get this vote out of the way because we have other things that we have to do. But I have to tell you, every single report that I've heard, every single article that I have read, not one of these so-called leaders, not one, and I'm not talking about my colleagues in here, but not one has addressed the crime issues that we deal with in the inner city. And I don't forgive that, and I'm not going to stop calling them out for that. So thank you for this inquiry. Mr. President.
Senator from the 14th still has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to inquire of the senator from the 5th.
Senator from the 5th does not appear to be in the chamber. Sergeant of Arms. Senator from the 5th, do you yield to an inquiry from the Senator of the 14th? She does. Proceed.
Thank you. And, Senator, I know that you are in the middle of handling some business. This, you know, is a bill that there are a lot of opinions on. But I wanted to talk to you. I know that you've heard all of these reports. I know that you have had conversations with Chris Koster when it comes to gang activity and guns and violations and such. Have you at all heard anything from some of these progressives that are in the House talk about the issues that we face in the inner city?
No, not today.
Have you this entire summer since they've been trying to veto 436?
All I've been hearing was a senator from Franklin love fest with Koster. That's it.
Well, I just have to
say,
I have to say, everybody knows I was against Koster, but we're actually friends now, so I'm not going to talk about him because
Did you hear him? He said his name. The senator basically said Koster's name like 20
That's name recognition,
times.
Senator. That's name recognition.
Yeah.
But here, I want to be serious for a moment. I know that you are concerned about the violence that is in our communities. And part of this legislation, even though I don't agree with a lot of it, and I'm going to vote against it today, the senator from Franklin, as well as Representative Funderburg, allowed us to add language that would help identify some of the issues that we have in our own black communities, in our poverty-stricken communities. And I just wanted to hear from you. Have you heard anything from some of these leaders about what plagues our black inner-city communities?
No.
You haven't. Okay, so that's a problem. But they're the only ones who are being heard. But, Senator, if you look at all the news reports, they're the only ones being heard. They don't look like you and
I. So you said you attached language to this particular?
Yes, I did.
Why would you do that, knowing that this is a horrible bill?
Because I wanted to make it a better bill. We do that often in the Senate. I think that when a gun is stolen, it should be immediately reported. I believe firmly in my heart of hearts, when a child is being taught how to use a gun, they should also be taught to store it safely. I also believe in my heart of hearts that when you have a gun in your house, it should be safely stored. These are some elementary issues. I believe that illegal possession of a gun is wrong. All of those things were addressed in the language that I added to this bill, and never once have any of some of these elitist progressives in the House ever talked about what happens in our inner city. And I'm offended by that. I'm offended by that, Senator. And yes, there are some elements in this bill that are wrong, but I am not going to stop, nor are you, because I know the conversations that you've been having. I am not going to stop talking about the violence that plagues our communities. I'm not going to stop, Senator. And even though some of these elitist progressives in the House, they get all the attention, I want to invite them to some of my ride-alongs. I want them to spend the night in the inner city, see how safe they feel. Or I want them to hear the gunshots at 2 and 3 and 4 o'clock in the morning, the same ones I hear. Or I want them to live two doors down from a gang member or across the street from a drug dealer. I invite them to do that. This bill, even though there are things that I don't agree in this bill, we addressed in this bill what we care about in terms of safety in our inner cities. And that's what I wanted to talk to you about. I'm done. I've said what I've needed to say. And hopefully some of these elitist progressives will find it in their hearts to be a little bit more, incorporate the entire community instead of just suburbia. Thank you, Mr. President.
Mr. President.
It's the President.
Senator,
it's the President.
From Barton.
President.
Senator from Franklin.
Senator from Franklin, do you yield to an inquiry? He does. Proceed.
Thank you, Senator, and I appreciate your passionate description of some of the delusions that are in this letter and their timing, and I think you're right. I think the timing was very precisely calculated to be sure that law enforcement agencies couldn't afford to take the time to check it out. If this could be true, then they had to respond without adequate judicial legal counsel, and et cetera. I also think, though, that there is a group who have said this is just a show. This is really just to send a message. It's really symbolic. There's really nothing of substance to this. And I think that if there is anything positive about the Koster letter, it's that it acknowledges that this is a very substantive piece of legislation. It's not just symbolic. Would you agree with that? Do you think that his letter would in fact substantiate the substantial nature of your legislation?
Well, I think it's black and white in the letter. I mean, he says so in the letter. And again, back to the timing, let me tell you something. If you're the Attorney General of a state and it takes you all the way until 4 days before veto session to release your analysis on a bill that's been around for months and months and months, let me tell you something, you don't deserve to be Attorney General. Does that make sense? I mean, I'm not asking you to be as confrontational as I tend to be, but what I'm saying is, if you're the Attorney General of a state, you're not supposed to be a beginner. You're not supposed to be somebody who can't figure something out until, poof, the 11th hour, and do what he's done. So either he is a snake-in-the-grass, lying politician, or he is too dumb to be Attorney General. But either way, I don't see why this letter should scuttle a bill, because suddenly God Almighty Chris Koster writes a crazy, lying letter, and then all of a sudden a bill that everybody's known about for months and months and months suddenly becomes something that has to die.
So do you think, Senator, that this letter was written to be persuasive or to panic?
Both.
Well, I don't really think it was written to be very persuasive, because when I read it, and then when I read comments from constitutional attorneys regarding it, it's not very persuasive.
Well, yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
it's really without a persuasive element. You have to read it on surface and not think it through for it to be effective. I don't know whether either of us was paying attention when the Miranda rights became part of federal law. Do you remember that, Senator?
Well, Senator, you're forgetting my youth.
That's right. I'm acknowledging your youth, Senator, but you know, I can't even imagine the discussions that might have happened then about how this was going to be the disaster for law enforcement, how this was going to interfere with catching criminals, and how it was going to interfere with enforcing the law, because it was going to protect the constitutional rights of those citizens that were subject to arrest.
Absolutely.
And you know, I look at this somewhat like that, is that we're hearing this same panic. We're hearing this same, well, you know, this is going to just destroy law enforcement. And I would think the same arguments were possibly made about Miranda rights. Would you, Senator?
I would suspect, although I was far too young to remember, I would suspect it would be very similar to what we're hearing from our Attorney General.
I think some of the things that you pointed out about that the elements of this that apply to the relationship between local and federal law enforcement are very carefully defined to constitutional protections.
Right.
Exactly like the Miranda rights.
Right.
They're addressing constitutional protections. And now we're saying, you know, we think maybe there's an arena here where acts are being taken that really aren't constitutionally reinforced. And we have law enforcement in our state, whether it's local sheriffs all the way to the highway patrol, who take an oath to that Constitution. And by their relationship, they are being forced to participate in that unconstitutional encroachment of rights.
If it's even happening.
That's right.
We don't even know for sure that anything like that is happening.
Exactly.
And that's why Chris Koster's argument is so hollow. Because what he's saying is that we should give carte blanche authority for federal agents to be able to trample our Constitution, and that we should ask our Missouri law enforcement to partner with them during their unconstitutional acts.
To subject their oath.
Yeah.
To that federal law enforcement agent. And I don't know that I'd ever really thought that through completely before this legislation and before the debate that has gone on in here. But to ask them to swear an oath and expect them to live up to that oath and then demand that they participate in activities, I'm not talking about the association with the groups, I'm talking about the activities of the group that they know are a violation of that oath. And there are sheriffs across Missouri who agree with us there. Haven't you heard from some?
Sure. Yeah.
And so that understand that. And they're compromised. These are men and women of integrity. And that's the reason they're in law enforcement. And they do not like being put in those compromising situations where they have questions about the constitutionality of some of these federal drug laws that don't mirror Missouri laws, and yet they're being asked to participate in those. And I agree completely with your description of this as protecting them, giving them the reinforcement of this legislature that says, in your role as a law enforcement officer, we will stand up for you when you have to, when there's a confrontational situation where you are on the right side of the Constitution. And I congratulate you, Senator, on that. You know, one of the things that I think we have to acknowledge, and I think you kind of touched on this, but how do you see the jurisdictional relationships here in terms of which jurisdictions create which jurisdictions? And, you know, we basically have a compact in our country. It's really not a contract with the federal and the state government. It's more of a compact. It's where, you know, a contract is where you basically have two equal parties. Do you see this as two equal parties?
You know, I always go back to the fact that it was the several states who formed and authorized the federal government.
So who would be the superior jurisdiction in that arrangement?
I would have to say that the states.
Did the federal government write the state constitution?
No, the states got together and created a federal
constitution. And wrote the federal constitution.
Yeah.
So they're the ones that drafted the federal constitution. Well, how do the states get their constitutions?
They write them.
Right. And they are required to write them. In order for a state to even apply for statehood, they must write their own state constitution. Now, it cannot conflict with those authorities granted the federal government.
Correct.
By the federal constitution. They can't go in there and say, well, you say we have Second Amendment protecting gun rights, but in our state we don't agree with that, because we have given that power of protecting that Second Amendment to the federal government. But they are, before they can even apply for statehood, every one of those states had to produce its own constitution. Why do you think that was?
Well, my guess would be so that there would be some degree of working together. I think some degree of us working with the federal government is a good thing. You know, people have oftentimes accused me and said, oh, well, Senator, do you want us to completely end all relationships with the federal government? No, I just simply want us to have a proper relationship
exactly.
with the federal government.
Exactly.
That's all. I think we should indeed have a relationship with the federal government. I think it just needs to be a proper relationship.
And I agree. And I think that's exactly why it is, because they acknowledge that since this is a federalist system of government, where a group of states with their own constitutions have created a secondary constitution and delegated to it certain powers, that you can't really be a part of that compact unless you have your own constitution, because you're in charge. How can you be in charge of the federal constitution if you have no constitution of your own?
That's a good point.
I believe that is that jurisdictional relationship. You know, I hear people occasionally say, well, there's this balance of powers between the federal and the state government, and I guess that term can be used, but I don't really like that term, because it's really not a balance of powers like in a contract, where you and I write a contract and we basically have the same power, and it describes it. But it's the compact is one where if one of those parties, if the federal government violates their compact, then that compact is no longer valid.
Right.
Because it was the states that awarded
right.
the contract to that federal government.
Yep.
And do you see that coming in at all to this Second Amendment, this address of the Second Amendment?
I think so. I mean, I hadn't really approached it from that angle, but as you've described that, I think I would be in agreement with what you're saying.
So is this, Senator, is this more about the Second Amendment or more about the Tenth Amendment?
I would almost say that it's more about the Tenth Amendment, because the Tenth Amendment makes it very clear that the federal government is supposed to stay within its boundaries. And so the only people that need to worry about this particular bill are people who want to give the federal government authority beyond their constitutional authority. And I think the majority of Missourians, those who will vote no on this override, clearly are voting against the majority of Missourians. Because the majority of Missourians clearly believe that it is within our rights as a state to exercise our God-given ability to be able to protect ourselves, and that is in our Second Amendment.
Right, right. Now, I agree 100%.
So there could be some people in this chamber tonight that are about to make a big mistake.
Well, and I don't know. I don't know where everyone is. I believe this is a very important piece of legislation. I believe it's an important debate. I believe it's important for us as a part of government, state government, to understand our role. I mean, you know, if this compact is violated, who has the authority to repair it?
Well, I think the states have to take their own authority to take those steps and to create those measures, and that's what we've done here.
Is that what it means when it says that if government violates its proper role, that it must be either fixed or abolished?
Yeah, sure.
I mean, who is supposed to do the fixing or abolishing? The federal government?
No, I think we are, Senator. I think we are.
And I don't understand why that's not clear. I don't understand why there's confusion on that, because our documents are clear. If the federal government violates this compact, we're told, and actually it's a part of our duty as citizens, as the people, you know, we the people, that's why the document begins that way, is that we the people are the ones who are told that we must either alter it or abolish it and set up in its place another form of government that will in fact protect our rights. We have county governments and we have state governments. What's the relationship there?
The state is superior.
Yeah, the state's superior to the counties. We create the counties, don't we?
The created should never become more powerful than the creator.
Exactly. Why is it we understand that between state and counties, but we don't understand it between federal and state?
Because we've been fooled and we've been fed a line for years and years and years, right? So just imagine, you know, I want to be very clear about this. I know that there are law enforcement entities that have spoken against this bill. I want to be very clear about this. I am not upset at our law enforcement community. Not at all. Put yourself in their shoes, okay? If you are a normal, everyday law enforcement professional, you put your life on the line every day when you leave the house, your family literally does not know if you're coming home that day. These people work hard, they work long hours, and they put it all on the line. And then all of the sudden, and if you're not a political person, right, and you don't understand that Chris Koster is, if anything, a political monster, a political master, okay, and then all of the sudden, you get a letter from the Attorney General of the state. Now, the Attorney General, am I mistaken if I think something along the lines of the Attorney General is kind of like our chief law enforcement officer in the state?
I've heard that phrase, Senator.
Okay, so you're a law enforcement officer, right? You're not politically minded. Your mind is centered on keeping people safe.
Right.
Right? And you get a letter from your boss's 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 boss, the chief law enforcement officer in the state of Missouri. You get a letter from that person telling you all these crazy imaginings. I mean, really, it's likely that you're going to believe some of it.
Right.
And even if you look at it with a little bit of suspicion, you're going to think, oh my goodness, I don't have time between now and Wednesday to figure out whether or not this is true, so my natural thing would be to oppose it.
Right.
I don't blame them.
Right.
I don't blame our law enforcement officials for what Chris Koster has done to them. Okay? I blame the governor who vetoed it and our attorney general who lied about it. That's who I blame.
I don't disagree, Senator, and I do think that some of this is just common sense. I mean, let's say we're successful in overriding the veto tonight, and that, of course, this immediately becomes law. Do you think tomorrow, what kind of changes do you think will happen in law enforcement tomorrow?
None. Unless law enforcement is somehow currently partnering with the federal government to perform unconstitutional acts. That's the only thing.
So
ladies
would you
and
like
gentlemen,
for that to change,
the
Senator?
Only thing that changes tomorrow, right, if we override this veto and this bill becomes law, the only thing that changes tomorrow is this in terms of law enforcement. If somewhere in the state of Missouri There is a project going on right now that is a partnership between the federal government and a state law enforcement agency, and that particular project is unconstitutional, then this law would get in the way of that. Every other thing that they do in partnership with each other would be untouched by this law.
How quickly do you think that should happen? That they stop unconstitutional acts?
I think they should. And I'm just going to trust that there's not anything like that going on.
Right.
Okay? I mean, I can't speak with authority on that, but I'm just going to trust that there is not currently anything underway
but if there were, and it was clearly recognizable, how soon should we stop that?
Right now.
So there's no real danger there of this destroying anything that doesn't need to be halted.
Correct.
Okay, well, let's take that same team and say, well, they aren't doing anything unconstitutional. So what do you think will change about them tomorrow after we pass this legislation?
Nothing.
Why?
Because they're not doing anything
Haven't we changed everything?
Because they're not doing anything. See, this is something that apparently Chris Koster is too much of a liar or too dumb to understand, is that unless they're currently doing something unconstitutional, this doesn't change anything in their world.
I agree, Senator, and I think, you know, when I think that through, I think, okay, let me just envision being in law enforcement, on a task force of some kind, and this law passes. I can envision when we get together tomorrow morning to talk about what we're going to do that day, or Monday morning to talk about what we're going to do that week, I can very easily envision this coming up. And people saying, okay, the legislature just overrode the governor's veto. We now have these new things to do. Tell me how that's going to change your work. And allow the officers to share anything that they think this is going to affect. And then I can see them addressing those and saying, well, okay, so, you know, we're concerned about this raid that we're preparing over here. And, you know, we're not sure that we might not be in violation of these federal gun, or a violation of the Constitution with these federal gun laws. And a conversation might take something, might be something like this. Well, how do you think that's in violation? Well, you know, we're doing this and this and this. And, well, if you just use state law, then how would you do that? Well, we do it this way and this way and this way. And I can kind of see our law enforcement agents saying, well, then let's do it that way. Then let's just change our procedure just a little bit. If there is something that they say, well, you know, I really think this is unconstitutional, then the next step might be, well, how are we going to deal with that? We need to talk to the FBI, or we need to talk to somebody about that. We need to explain to them what Missouri's law is and get their ideas about how we proceed on this. What Koster's letter does is it gets us to imagine something that is totally unimaginable.
Yep.
It says, tomorrow, everybody goes home.
Yep.
And there's no more task forces.
Yep.
And you're all unprotected.
Yep.
You can't let this happen.
Yeah.
And our law enforcement agents look at that and they say, man, okay, I don't have time to call anybody. We don't have time to have any meetings. The law hasn't been passed. We can't let this happen. And Mr. Koster, what can we do? Well, you need to call your legislators.
Yep.
And tell them what a disaster this is going to be.
Yep.
And how it's going to be. Don't stop to think what will actually happen in your meetings the morning afterwards, when you're talking about enforcement, when you're talking about the duties of the day. Don't stop to think about that. Just call your legislator.
And that's why Attorney General Chris Koster timed that letter the way he did, because he knew it would have exactly that effect. Now, you know something else I thought of is we have many, many law enforcement professionals in the state of Missouri who have joined an organization called Oath Keepers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oath Keepers is basically an organization mostly consisting of law enforcement officers, okay? Law enforcement officers who have joined this organization called Oath Keepers, that they, by joining this group, have taken an additional oath that says, you know what? I will not carry out any unconstitutional orders by my chain of command. If my chain of command gives me an unconstitutional order, I'm not going to follow that order. So, you know what? Hey, Chris Koster, Chris Goster, I don't know if he's listening right now, but the Twitterverse is twittering everything I say to Chris Goster. So whether he's hearing me live or whether he's hearing me in the Twitterverse, either way, hey, Chris Goster, if you're going to be intellectually honest about this letter, then you need to call for the immediate firing of all law enforcement professionals who are members of Oath Keepers. Because being a member of Oath Keepers simply pretty much says that they're going to do what this bill does. Yeah. So Chris Goster, why don't you call tomorrow morning and call for the resignation or firing of every person who belongs to Oath Keepers? Because if you believe all the stuff in this letter, and you are intellectually honest, which we all know you are not, but if you were intellectually honest, you would call for the immediate firing of all law enforcement professionals that are members of the Oath Keepers organization. You think he'll do that?
I don't envision that happening.
Yeah, I don't either.
When our nation was created and the states wrote the federal constitution and delegated powers to them, they did officially delegate those powers. Would you agree that it is appropriate where those powers are constitutionally delegated that we as states need to yield to those?
Yes, absolutely. As a state must yield to the federal government when the federal government is acting within the confines of Article 1, Section 8 of the U.S. Constitution. Yes, in that case, the U.S., the federal government, is indeed superior to the state.
Did you know, Senator, and you probably do, that there have been occasions when, in fact, the states did not do that? And most of those happened back prior to the Civil War, during the slave, non-slave era of the United States. There were laws in a lot of states, and at the federal level, in our Constitution, slaves were protected. Their ownership was protected. And so if I was a slave and I escaped to a non-slave state, that state had to, if they caught me, had to return me to that slave state. Do you know that there were some states that didn't agree with that?
Yeah, what did they call that? Nullifying?
They called that nullification, Senator.
Yeah, nullification.
And they would pass state laws. Now, these were not, they were violating the Constitution.
Yeah.
They weren't saying the Constitution is violating our rights. They were saying you are violating individuals' rights.
Yep.
And we as a state, even though we are a part of this compact, there is a higher law. There are unalienable rights. And you in the Constitution are actually violating those unalienable rights. And those states would pass their own laws. Did you know, Senator, that in at least one of those states, maybe more, that if any federal official came in and tried to take one of those slaves back to a slave state, that not only was that federal official subject to law, to violation of the law, but whoever allowed him to was also subject to penalties, up to $1,000, $5,000. That's a lot of money back then.
Oh, that was a lot of money back
then. At some points, several years in prison. If they, in fact, violated those state laws that were in contradiction to federal law that was called nullification. Now, the difference is, they really were saying, federal government, you got it wrong. We're saying, no, we're not saying that there's anything wrong with the federal constitution in this arena. We're saying you're violating it, and by violating it, you're violating our liberties, and our law enforcement officers have taken an oath to protect those liberties that you are violating. And I wish we had more of a historical context individually and as a body so that, you know, we really could address more of those issues, or address less those issues that have already been addressed, and not have to continue to revisit the lessons that we should have learned. But I believe, Senator, that what your bill does is that it begins at least that restoration process of how we became the exceptional United States that we are, how we became the freest and the most powerful nation in the world by acknowledging individual liberty and economic freedom. And I believe that your bill moves us back, and I believe that its significance is more aligned with the 10th Amendment even than it is with the Second. Because it recognizes that it's that 10th Amendment that empowers us to protect that Second Amendment. Because we did not give the federal government the powers that sometimes are being taken. And our law enforcement officials are being asked to compromise their oaths. And our citizens are being asked to lay down and play dead because we have an all-powerful federal government. I believe that's why, and I think if you read Attorney General Coster's letter, that's the perspective you see.
Yep.
You see one that says, you know what, if the federal government says it, it's done.
Yep.
And there's nothing we can do about it. And that is so un-American.
It is repugnant to the United
States.
It is repugnant to everything the United States stands for.
Right. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
For the legislation. Thank you, Mr. President.
Mr. President, Senator from the 7th has been pacing. For what purpose do you rise?
Speak on the bill, Mr. President.
Proceed.